Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey and Shad here, your host for this weekend show. Thank you everyone for spending some of your weekend with us, whether you're listening on the radio, on our website, podcast, or YouTube channel. Please be sure to hit like, subscribe, and share your comments with us on whatever medium you are listening to our show. This weekend show is focused exclusively on investing in commodities sectors, especially the commodities equities. In the first half of the show, we're going to be going around the horn with gold stocks, silver stocks, copper stocks, oil and uranium stocks, seeing what opportunities lie within those. And then the back half of the show, more of a focus in the energy sector, mostly up in Canada. Starting off with Sean Broderick. Sean is the editor of Wealth Megatrends and Resource Trader, also contributing analyst to Weiss Ratings Daily. Look, Sean, as I said, let's focus on the equities, the commodity equities. Let's start off with gold stocks, because gold above $3,000 as we're recording this, GDX, GDXJ, those major ETFs with the gold stocks, those have also been breaking out to some very significant highs. Look, I've been on record saying, at least for the last 6 to 12 months, that this is the best market I have seen for especially gold stocks. The big stocks are performing well. The mid caps are doing well, and many juniors are also doing well. So, Sean, let's start off with the producers. What are you seeing in terms of gold producers, those equities, the opportunities there, please?
Yeah, well, most of them have had a good run. Now, we have seen gold start to go sideways, probably because everything's calming down ahead of the big tariff announcement on April 2nd. And so we've started to see some of these equities pull back. So now I'm going to look for opportunities to add to positions in like existing positions we have, which are doing extraordinarily well, like say Heliostar Metals, for example. That's just rip roaring. That's doing fantastic. Equinox, even though their merger with Caliber might be in trouble, it still looks very good. Caliber, their like major shareholder, came forward and said, we don't like the deal with Equinox, and so we don't want that. We're going to see how the shareholders vote. If the shareholders vote not to make the deal, I actually like Caliber as an independent company. I think it looks fantastic. So, you know, we own that in like one of my special reports. I was expecting it to go away and be absorbed into Equinox. Maybe not. Maybe we get to hang on to that. Large companies. Agnico Eagle is just one of the best miners around, period. It's fantastic. It's doing great stuff for us. And so I think that you just should definitely be owning that one. And, you know, large companies, which I had written off a long time ago, like, say, Newmont and even Barrick, Sad Sack Barrett, you know, they are looking good again. They are looking strong. And like, I thought, you know, the people at Barrick, they just had things so wrong. And then late last year, things started to click for that company. And it's just been on a rampage since the end of December. The thing's just been going higher. It's making higher highs and higher lows, which is what you want to see in anything. Things never go in a straight line. You want to see them zigzag higher. So even though I don't own Barrick now, on the next pullback, if and when we get one, maybe I'll add it. That's at least a few to work with.
Yeah, Sean, all great names there. And it's kind of been exciting to see the sector getting some traction, pulling in some bigger volumes finally. There was no volume in most of these stocks, and now starting to see an uptick in that. And when you look at Q1, we're almost done with it here. We've had the highest gold price and average price for the quarter that we've ever seen. We've had a pretty good response to the Q4 earnings. The Q3 ones were kind of a stinker, but the Q4, pretty good response in most of the big producers and the mid-caps. With Q1 having record high prices, do you think you'll see even more analyst coverage where it's just making too much money, the margins are too big to ignore?
Oh, yeah, I think so. And it's amazing, like, what some of these companies have done. Take SSR Mining, for example, which is another one of our positions. I mean, its earnings are forecast to grow 411% this year. Now, if a tech company does that, Wall Street goes bananas, says, oh, that's fantastic. That's great. A gold company does that, and it gets, like, no coverage. Now, the people who are buying it know the things very nicely. It's up like 170% off its 52-week low. But it's still amazing to me how little coverage this gets in the broad media. When will that happen? You know, that is a good question. I had a price target on gold of $3,000 by the middle of this year. We seem to have gotten there early. Part of that might be because of the tariffs, because in anticipation of tariffs, there were big imports into the U.S. and combined with the central bank buying and all the other bullish things that were going on for gold, that seemed to give gold a little bit of juice right there. So maybe we'll see a pullback for a bit and then we'll take off. But where's the next top? I mean, there is some overhead resistance at 3,100. Would that be it? I don't think so. I think that the next leg is just going to be a good long one. Of course, I have told you guys that longer term, I have a multi-year target on gold of more than $6,000 an ounce. And I think we're going to get there. The move we've seen has been fantastic, but it just can be so much more because I'm old enough to have been around for multiple bull markets in gold. And when this stuff runs, it can really run. And when gold runs, the gold miners, like the ones that I've talked about here today, they just go ballistic. Now, of course, history doesn't have to repeat. There can be a lot of things that change and all that stuff. But, I mean, it's the hard lessons of long experience that just tell me what's going to happen here. And you really want to be in the precious metal sector when this stuff happens, gold and silver, too.
Well, the one thing that's clear is that there's a whole lot of indecision around the world right now. Trade wars seem to be ramping up. Everybody waits for the turn of the month to see what tariffs are coming in place. And we keep hearing from companies that they're handcuffed. They don't know what to do because they don't have any clarity on what direction these trade wars are going. And clearly that's all helping the precious metals, gold especially. In terms of the production stocks, then, yes, their earnings are knocking it out of the park simply because the product they're selling keeps going up in price. Gold has been up 10 out of the last 13 months. GDX has been up 10 out of the last 13 months. But Sean, in terms of individual companies, any stocks that you have on your radar that either you own or you're watching that have production growth, anything that adds that extra torque to these higher metals prices?
Well, Equinox certainly does. IAM Gold, that's in another one of my portfolios. That's going to have production growth this year. In my personal portfolio, I have Discovery Silver. And even though it's called Discovery Silver, well, they actually picked up the Porcupine mine from Newmont. And so now they're a gold miner. That's how these things go. And they're going to have great growth. They're going to be fantastic. That Heliostar as well. Heliostar is growing big time. If you want to look at silver, one of the we have in that portfolio, which is under the water right now because we bought it a while ago, but they have earnings coming out soon, and I think it's going to be fantastic. That's Aya Gold and Silver. They mine in Morocco. They have a fantastic silver mine there. They had some problems last quarter because their production didn't meet expectations. But, you know, I mean, you know, the thing about mining is if anything can go wrong, it will go wrong. And, you know, it's an up and down business. You have bad quarters, you have good quarters. Well, they had their bad quarter. I don't think the next one will be bad. The people running that mine are smart. So, you know, that might be a dark horse that people might want to look at. Don't take any of this as investment advice, by the way. I'm just telling you what I already have in my portfolios. And so I thought they were good ideas at the time. I'm being proven right on a lot of these things, but we don't know how things will go. So this is not investment advice. But I like all the names that I'm talking about here.
Well, Sean, you bring up a couple interesting names because with Discovery Silver, a silver company that's optionality play on higher prices, buying the Newmont assets, the Porcupine Mine Complex, all those gold mines and gold development projects, you see a junior becoming a producer With Heliostar, we saw the same thing. They had some exploration projects in Alaska and Mexico. Then they suddenly buy producing assets in Mexico, and they have a development project that they're going to try to bootstrap with the producing assets. Is this a trend we're going to see more of with the gold and silver companies, juniors, that decide, hey, what the heck? The metals prices are big enough. I'm going to jump in the ring, put my producer hat on.
I hope so, because those are the kind of companies that I like to buy, because you can usually buy them before Wall Street as a whole actually finds out about them. I mean, certainly the people who are specialists in like this kind of thing will know, but you can get in ahead of the crowd. And I think that we're at that, let's say, that phase of the market where probably companies will want to focus on the assets they know will make the money. So we'll see the big boys like Newmont spin off non-core assets. That's what happened with Porcupine. They had too many other good things to like focus on that was too small of a project for them to actually deal with, which is fine, because for a small company like Discovery, it's actually a great asset. It's something that they can focus on, they can bring forward, they can really add value to it. So yeah, I expect to see more of this, and it's just going to be a lot of fun. This is when you want to be in the gold mining markets. Oftentimes it's miserable, nothing's going on, you know, it's just crazy. But now things are starting to pick up, and we still haven't seen much movement. That's the crazy thing. I mean, I was talking about SSR mining being up a lot. A lot of these things haven't moved that much. They really haven't. And so their times to move are in the future, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, Sean, yeah, we'll see. I have seen a lot of these stocks move, in all fairness. Even the GDX is up 71% just in 13 months. So we have seen some of these stocks really get going. One sector of stocks, though, that I think has been still lagging is a lot of these silver stocks. You even mentioned a couple stocks there that were silver names that moved over to the gold sector on the production front. There's a number of small silver miners that, quite frankly, when I look at their earnings, they're still not making the money that I thought they would at these much higher silver prices. Are you moving into silver stocks as well for either a catch-up trade or simply to maybe make some money at this almost $35 an ounce silver price?
I find that the silver mining world is split starkly between those companies I want to own a lot and those I don't want to own at all. And I hate to give any names out, because that's probably the stuff that I'm going to recommend to my subscribers on the next pullback for that whole catch-up thing you were just like speaking about, because they haven't performed as well. That's actually what I was referring to there, because it's very hard to find pure silver miners. You know, they always have at least a little gold, or they have some other byproduct. But I do have some companies on my radar. On the next pullback, that's probably the stuff I'm buying, is like either silver miners or developers, which have just extraordinary potential here.
Yeah, it's exciting to follow the silver space. There really is a story of the haves and have-nots, because just like the gold stocks, I've seen a lot of silver stocks that have moved. There's a lot that are up 100 to 200%, so I'd say that's a good move. SILJ has been moving, and it's finally starting to catch up a little bit on the gold stock. So we'll keep tabs on the silver stocks, of course. But boy, another commodity that's also breaking out to new all-time highs just this week is copper. We've talked a lot about copper and the fundamentals for it on the show for a long time. But when any commodity goes up and makes a new all-time high like it just has this week, up in the 520s, even got up to like 537 just earlier in the trading yesterday. And we're recording this on a Wednesday. But man, copper has been moving, but the copper stocks have had a more muted run. Are you looking for that same kind of catch-up trade in the copper equities?
Well, yeah, I mean, some stuff doesn't really make sense to me. Like, Hudbay Minerals should be up more than it is. I mean, what's going on there? Tech Resources, I mean, they've really been making some progress. I know that their earnings don't look so good this year, but still, with a high copper price, they should do better, right? I don't own either of those stocks, by the way, so you can take that any way you want, you know? And you can look at the larger ones. Freeport is also one of the world's biggest gold producers, right? So, but it is a copper company, and it's only like 22% off its lows. So, yeah, part of what's going on there is I think people are worried what's going on with copper, and they might be right. A lot of it has to do with the tariffs. So once the tariffs are in place, are we going to see copper prices calm down? Now, I think that would be a pullback that could be bought. Maybe that's when you want to get into these names, is on the next pullback. Like, we've had this great run in copper. It looks like it might be peaking now. I don't know. On like April 2nd, when we see the copper tariffs roll out, because that's one of the things Trump said that he wanted to target, was he wanted to put new copper tariffs on. Once we see what they are and companies adjust, then maybe that's when you want to buy these stocks if they pull back then. Or else maybe they'll take off. Maybe I'm an idiot for not owning them now. That could be too.
Sean, it was earlier this week that I had a guy from a commodities trading desk on the show, and he actually pointed out the spread, the differential between COMEX over the LME price, which I believe was 70 to 80 cents. And he actually said that a lot of the copper stocks more following that LME price, which who knows what that all means, but that clearly is tariff related. But on the back of that tariff related news, do you like any of the copper stocks with U.S. projects then, if the U.S. truly is going to focus on trying to build up some domestic production?
I don't know. I mean, certainly what we've heard from the White House is they are going to clear all the roadblocks from like U.S. mines, right? So if you want to build a mine in the U.S., it's going to be free and easy. You can just do whatever you want. Now, it's still going to be a slow process to build a mine. I'm not sure a lot of people realize that even if the government wasn't standing in your way, it would still take years to build a mine. But that certainly makes it more attractive, I think. Having all the red tape lifted, you know, makes these stocks look better. I'm not sure what to actually recommend in that case. I'd still like to see some kind of new regulations roll out. They aren't going to completely get rid of all regulations. What are the new regulations going to look like? I'd love to see that. But that should certainly help those stocks. Yes, U.S. producers.
Well, and another big news event that dropped this week from the Trump administration was they put out an executive order, the immediate measures to increase American mineral production. And it really is focused more on critical minerals, but they lumped all kinds of different commodities into this. Things like gold were considered critical. Strangely enough, copper wasn't on this list, but they had things in there like potash, uranium. There's just a lot of different incentives now to not only take away some of the regulation hurdles, but also funding options, increasing the permitting timelines. And some of these things have an urgency factor, like in 10 days they have to do XYZ, and in 30 days they have to do this. What do you think that means for the commodity sector overall in the U.S., not just copper, but gold, uranium, fertilizers, all of it?
Well, if we have more production, prices should go down, right? I mean, but it's a long way between announcing these things and actually getting things done. So maybe the excitement will lift these stocks in the meantime. And as stocks come into production, then their prices should go up, even if the general price of things actually goes down. I mean, fertilizer is an important one. And I know they don't want to be so dependent on like foreign sources of like all kinds of fertilizer. So I think that's something they would proceed with. I really don't follow that space, you know, but there's some real potential there. Again, it's still early days though. You know, what are they going to do? They actually say they want to do these things, but what are the actual regulations going to look like? That's what I'd love to see.
I agree with you. That's always the big question. And then the other question I have is, will this free up capital? Because yes, shortening permitting times and even handing out permits, that does help companies on the share price side, and that can lower the cost of capital. But we need more money coming into these development plays to actually help build these assets. Do you see a change happening here where money will start to fund these companies?
Well, we need to get the younger generation to stop throwing their money at cryptocurrencies and start funding mining projects. I mean, that's what happened to a lot of it. That's why at least some money dried up for the mining industry, was like the younger investors said, no, you know, I'd much rather go play with electronic money. That looks much more interesting. And so I would like to see that happen. I'd like to see more funds come into this. And for the health of the nation, it's really important that we get more funding for these things. I mean, we need to develop these projects, but I don't have a crystal ball, so I don't know what's going to happen there.
Well, another interesting thing that's in this executive order is there is an initiative in there for the Secretary of Defense and the National Security Capital Forum and the Department of Defense to get in there and try to pair up private capital with commercially viable domestic mineral production projects. So they're basically trying to play matchmaker as a government, and they say that there's funds available in here that they're going to apply towards the mining sector. So we'll just have to follow along. Sean, they do name uranium in there, and that's a commodity we wanted to get to here on this weekend show. Uranium's been in kind of a mess most of this year. It's been in a mess really since the halfway through last year. So the second half of 2024, all the way into this year, it's been in the hurt locker. And now there's a little bit more focus on it, but it doesn't seem to be lifting the stocks that much. They had a little pop, but then another drop. How are you looking at uranium and, more importantly, uranium equities?
Well, perhaps uranium investors have the same fear I do, which is that since things seem to be warming up between the U.S. and Russia, we might lift a ban on imports of uranium and uranium fuel from Russia, and they might remove their ban on exports to us. And if that happens, then we'll have cheap Russian fuel coming into the U.S. Now, I would certainly love to see more U.S. mines developed. And certainly, if the U.S. is worried about national security, then they want uranium mines. That just makes common sense. But I'm not sure how it will work out. That's an industry that I'm kind of avoiding now just because playing in gold is so much fun. You know, I mean, might as well go where you're having fun. And I'm having a lot of fun in precious metals right now. So that's what I'm really doing. I like the concept of uranium. I don't know what the impact of our warming relationship with Russia will be. So I'd like to see how that plays out before I start going back into uranium stocks again.
Sean, I think that's so important to understand that you're not alone in that feeling, right? You are a resource investor. You like putting money to play in commodity stocks, but quite frankly, when a sector, one of the biggest sectors like gold in the commodity sector, is running, then you get focused there. It's no different than other people getting focused in a tech sector. Is the fact of the matter is, when gold is consuming a lot of this money, sometimes you just need to ride that wave rather than try to fight it.
Yeah, I agree.
So Sean, are you avoiding all uranium stocks then? Or are you trying to pick the bottom in any of them?
Well, I have two, and I had a lot more, but I'm not trying to pick a bottom at this time. No, I'm keeping an eye on Cameco, seeing what happens with that, because so much money has been chased out of the sector. That's where you'll start to see money flow back in first, I think. I mean, I can think of some other great U.S.-focused uranium companies that should be doing better than they are, and they aren't. You know, maybe if UEC starts to come back, maybe if UR Energy starts to really make some traction, that'll be great. There is so much potential in these small companies. And yet at this time, as you were just saying, I think that they're kind of getting squeezed out because it's so much fun being in like other industries.
Well, one more commodity sector that we'll squeeze in here, focused on energy as well, is oil and nat gas stocks, traditional energy. It's the same kind of thing. Nat gas has had a big rip. Some of those companies have gotten some traction. Oil has been rather muted, though, stuck between 65 and 70, kind of in a range. And yet the oil stocks have had a bounce recently. How are you looking at things like traditional energy?
Oh, more than a bounce. My like Chevron and my Devon Energy, they're doing great. And there's a whole bunch of energy names that I've been looking at recently. Now, they seem to be peaking today. You and I are speaking on Wednesday, but, you know, nothing travels in a straight line. When they pull back, that'll give me an opportunity to buy them because I didn't buy them earlier. And that's EQT, EXE, AR, RRC, CTRA. These are the symbols that I'm looking at. I'm also looking at Schlumberger, which just peaked today again. So it's going to pull back, but man, does that thing look like it wants to break out of a long-term base. So, you know, I mean, I think there's just so much potential there. And yet, this is the thing that is driving me crazy. I've seen international agency after international agency coming out and saying, we're going to have a surplus of oil this year, right? So maybe, but that's not how oil is acting. Oil is acting like it's worried that the U.S. and Israel are about to bomb Iran. And maybe they are. You know, I mean, we've seen some like bombers move to that small island they have out in the middle of nowhere, you know, and stuff like that. Maybe they are. But what's going to go on with Russian oil exports. Since peace seems to be breaking out in Ukraine, does that mean that Europe is going to start buying Russian oil and especially natural gas again? I'm not sure if they are. There's a lot of, I guess we're going to have to use the word uncertainty again. There's a lot of uncertainty in this market that I can't really figure out why things are going the way they are. I like the action in the stocks, though, and maybe that's leading the price in the commodities. So maybe on the next pullback, those are the things that I'll be buying.
Yeah, that's the other thing that I've noticed, too, is that the energy stocks are doing great. Some of those ETFs are right at all-time highs. They're very near them, while oil has continued to struggle, and natural gas has done pretty well, although that's pulled back a little bit, too. But again, lots of opportunities in commodity stocks. The first quarter of this year has been very good for investors. Really just seems you need to be in some of the bigger names, too, to take advantage of these moves. But that money definitely has started to continue to trickle down, not just the mid-tiers, but now also into some of the smaller companies. Sean, it's great having you on the show, and thank you very much for sharing a number of company names for our listeners to watch out for. Again, Sean Broderick is the editor of Wealth Megatrends and Resource Trader, also the contributing analyst to Weiss Ratings Daily. Sean, great chatting with you. Thanks for taking time on this weekend show. And everyone, stick around. We're going to be right back with even more of a focus in the oil and natural gas sector.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.